courting. There you go. Look at that. No one's going to know what this workshop is about until Ori talks, so that works.
Yeah.
Ore, how would you like your time?
Just give it to me straight, no chaser.
Got it.
Just give me the 20 minutes. Oh, it's a huge responsibility. I have to repeat everything that Chris just said. My name is Ori. I'm a compulsive eater, and I just celebrated 10 years of sobriety on July 14th, and I'm down. That was 485 pounds, and I'm down 235 or 240 pounds from my top weight. And here is my. Can y'all see these pictures? Awesome. So yeah, this is me at my highest. This is me to the right here at about between 60 and 90 days of recovery, returning back to life. This was me also at my top weight. Here it is again, and this was me at about between 90, not, I think it was around 90 and 100 days or something like that, and returning back to life in this current recovery. So let me stop sharing. I guess you know what I was just thinking about this morning, and so I recently learned how to swim. This is the first time I've taken official swimming lessons, and you know, and I just thought about the so one of the techniques that I learned is how to float, how to properly float. And like the body is not naturally built to float. I mean, there's buoyancy, but it takes work to float, to stay afloat. Like you can't just lay in the water and think, you know, there's breathing you have to do. It's probably better that you're doing a little bit of movement while you're floating. You have to balance yourself and like this, and it's like a constant active process of floating. And even in treading water, it takes a lot of work to tread water. And being able to stay, you know, and I just thought about how my recovery is like that. It takes constant work, consistent work to stay floating and to stay in recovery. And that kind of aligns with page 92 in the AA 12 and 12, step 10. It says, now that we're in AA and sober and winning back the esteem of our friends and business associates, we find that we still need to exercise special vigilance as an insurance against big shotism. We can often check ourselves by remembering that we are today sober only by the grace of God, and that any success we may have be having is far more his success than ours. In that, like, just in that one short paragraph, it is so densely packed. And you know, I think about these workshops over the years, like relapse, prelapse. At the center of all of it is God for me. Like, in continuing to stay vigilant in the pursuit or in seeking that conscious relationship. On page 85, we've heard this. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Laurels are past accomplishments. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And I and this, like, for me, I don't know what exactly the combination of spiritual actions that I engage in that keep me in a state of grace to where I'm not using food like I once did. Like, I really don't know. I wish I could, you know, in the earlier stages of my recovery, when I was a little bit more rigid a little bit more evangelical and and convicted, had the I was blessed with conviction, like, oh, this is the right way. Like, I could probably tell you, but like now, like, I really don't know what it is, because my routine has changed over the year. Like, I do more things more consistently at one time, and then, like, so I've never been graced with like an automatic, this is what it is every day I do. I've never had that. I've wanted that. I've wanted that so I could present it to you like I'm perfect. Like I've risen to some spiritual superiority or something like that. I've wanted to be, but it's always been imperfect. Just the things that I do. So it's like I like kind of have to just throw all the darts at the board. And I just do a combination of things all the time consistently that I do it enough to where I'm in this place, this state of grace. And I also haven't, I need to talk to more people about this, but like I haven't lost, I still have a fear that this thing can always come back. I don't know if that ever disappears, but I always feel like, I don't know if any of you have ever walked in a parking structure late at night. And it's like you swear you hear like somebody's following you. You like it is that's how I feel in my recovery. Like, oh, this thing is it can I can still get caught. Like, nope, I can still get got by this. On page 22 of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, this is when we first challenged to admit defeat, most of us revolted. We had approached AA expecting to be taught self-confidence. Then we had been told that so far as alcohol is concerned, self-confidence has no is no good whatever. In fact, it was a total liability. I'm afraid, like I actively pray that I don't get this feeling of like I know it now. I don't, I pray to God, like seriously, that I never have a moment of confidence around this in the food and I got this. Because I've been there, and not only is it my experience, but I've observed that in others. Like, I can hear it in people share when they have this, like, just a lack of humility around this, and they slip into, like you can just hear it in the talk, like, oh, you got this. Like you've got to figure it out. You're coasting. I'm terrified of being there. It says our sponsors declared that we were the victims of a mental obsession so subtly powerful that no amount of human willpower could break it. There was, they said, no such thing as the personal conquest of this compulsion by unaided will. Relentlessly deepening our dilemma, our sponsors pointed out our increasing sensitivity to alcohol and allergy, they called it. I mean, that it just reading that still sends the shivers down my back. Like, just I fully accepted the grave nature of what I suffer from. And that's what continues to motivate me. That's part of the motivation. That's not all of it, but I don't have this a little bit. I have it a lot of bit. So, I mean, I say this jokingly, but I've become a connoisseur of like these relapse stories. Like, I study these relapse stories. I study the state of mind that precedes that first compulsive bite because I'm terrified of doing that. And it's not that I think that it's gonna, what it does is it motivates me towards the spiritual solution. Right? It doesn't, that understanding isn't to equip my will so I can marshal that in moments. That's not the intent in like that's not the intent when I'm listening to people's stories, when I'm listening, that's the what I'm doing is it's motivating me towards the solution and continuing to pursue this thing. And it says, few indeed were those who so excelled had ever won through single-handed combat. It was a statistical fact that alcoholics almost never recovered on their own resources. And this had been true apparently ever since man had first crushed grapes. And when I read that, like it reinforces, like, I can't do this alone. So another part of my protection, my rehabilitation, is recovering in community. Like, I've done this men's group. I'm a part of this men's group. It's been 10 years. And I don't necessarily, I don't go to this men's group because it's going to be like, like, I don't necessarily want to do this men's group every Sunday. My sponsors asked me to, like, I remember when he first transitioned to asking me be a facilitator. I didn't want to do any of that. Like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, that's your thing. This is not my thing. And, but like Tim says, it's like I had to transition from being a taker to being a giver. Like, the reason why I stepped up and I said yes to all those things is because I if I didn't, it was gonna it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's it in my thinking is always gonna revert back. Showing up for these guys, being of service, continuing to be active and a full participant in what we're doing here, continue like doing all these things, it's just I'm taking out insurance. I'm like, it's insurance. I want to read page 32 in the big book Alcoholics. Then he felt victim to a belief which practically every alcoholic has, that his long period of sobriety and self-discipline had qualified him to drink as other men. Out came his carpet slippers in a bottle. In 2 months, he was in the hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate his drinking for a while, making several trips to the hospital meantime. Then, gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal. Every attempt failed. Though a robust man at retirement, he went to pieces quickly and was dead within a few 4 years. And that's applicable to me in recovery. Right? This, if I don't continue in these spiritual actions, I'm going to fall victim to this thinking. Like, I've been there. I've been there. I've experienced it. I know it all too well. So if I'm not doing these things, if I'm not staying ever vigilant, this becomes me. I'm absolutely convinced of it. I've seen it. I recently had a conversation with someone. I remember there was someone in program who and I don't know why this story stuck out in my mind, but they had talked about they had reached 10 years of recovery. And this was somebody that, I had, I guess maybe I had pedestalized or something like that. And they had 10 years of recovery and lost it. And they relapsed. And I was approaching 10 years. And I was terrified. I was terrified that for some reason in my mind, 10 years means that I'm going to think that I have something, that I know something, and that I'm going to ease the standards of my recovery. And still to this day, it's ever present in my mind. Like, I can't stop. I can't rest on these little, I can't rest on this. And then on page 66, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we are to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholics, these things are poison. Like, that is some strong language. Fatal. Poison. And I take that quite literally. And I think about, I'm a high bother individual. Like, there's, man, I collect resentments. Man, if I had a dollar for every resentment that I have collected over time, I'd probably be a millionaire by now. There's a lot about life that doesn't go according to Ori's plan, right? And I can't continue to be in this state of at war with life. In a fight with situations, circumstances, places, person, I can't continue to be in a fight, because if I'm continually in a fight, continually discontent and bother, eventually I'm a seek relief in some way. So the mastery that they suggest, I have to constantly be looking at those things in seeking and getting and getting and getting relief from a spiritual source. God, please relieve me of this anger. Show me how I need to change to meet these circumstances. And again, I'm doing all this so I can stay in a state of grace, so I can still be in the light. And because I just know that once that light shuts off, it's only a matter of time. Like, I firmly believe that. And in my last minute, page 249, Alcoholics Anonymous comes of age. The fact of hitting bottom to produce a surrender, which cut the ego to size, was evident fairly soon. In time, two additional facts manifested themselves. The first was that a reduced ego has marvelous recuperative powers. The second was that surrender is an essential disciplinary function and experience. It is common knowledge that a return of the full-fledged ego can happen at any time. Years of sobriety are no insurance against its resurgence. Like, that lets me know that no matter how much time I have, like, I can still get got. I can still get caught. And that ego slips in so many different ways. Yeah, it's no longer the food. I'm no longer under the lash of compulsive overeating. That's not motivating me like it once did in my early years. Now it's my ego, my self-will. Me needing to be something. Me needing things to go my way. Me needing your approval. Whatever it is, this whatever way it shows up. And that's the thing that, and that's the beauty of it. Like, the more recovery I've experienced, it's open. The more life is opened up. The more life that I'm experiencing, the more opportunities for God to come in and in new experiences, but also this ego. This self is still unmanageable. I'll give you a real example. Just this morning, my lady asked for, I booked tickets for a recent trip. And like, I was proud of myself for doing that. Like, I took initiative. I got it. And she just asked, can you give me the code so I can change the dates of the rental? And I felt immediately hurt and threatened, like, all this good work I did, like, it was immediate, like, hurt, like, what are you doing? You're changing everything. I almost shut down, so it could, these things, I have to bring them out to the light. I have to ask for God's help and growth. And that's the new frontiers. Like, how can I be more effective in this life at bringing a different vision into it, like bringing a different energy, and bringing these principles, these love, love, tolerance, all this honesty. Like, how can I get better in that way? So I hope I didn't sound like I'm coming off of, like, I really, like, I'm figuring this out just like with y'all. Like, I'm in this. I hope I didn't come off like like I know it all, or like I'm some guru on this thing. Like, I that's not my intent here. I truly just want to be helpful, and I'm getting better. I'm a sick man getting better, like all y'all, or women, and whatever you identify as.
Thank you very much, Ore. Very much appreciate your share today. And I remember you told me when I first came in, I had a lot of ideas, and those ideas definitely did not last. So thank you very much for speaking. We're gonna go to our next speaker. Please help me introduce Amber C.
Amber, how would you like your time?
Can I just have like a 3 minute wrap up?
Sure.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Amber, compulsive overeater. Thank you all for being on here today, and for Ore, who just spoke also with your experience, strength, and hope. I really liked the analogy of the walking in the parking lot and this thing coming, following you, because in my, and I think it's almost a healthy fear for me anyway. I say that I am a chronic relapser. I probably have more relapse in my story than I do recovery. I've been in here since 2005, and I played the roller coaster ride for a really, really, really long time. And it's not fun, it's not fun. And I didn't learn anything other than, I wasn't willing to do whatever it took. I have, I should qualify. My top weight in, outside of program was about 250 pounds. My top weight in program was 242 pounds. That's not even what I came in when I walked in the door. And that's what I mean by relapse. It fucking sucked. I gained more weight than when I even came in the doors. And I'm down 112 pounds from my top weight. And I just want to say that my recovery date is January 14th of 2023, and which also means that I relapsed in recovery. And I like what other people were saying about the prelapse, because there is a component to that that I was not paying attention to, and that if like the speaker said before us, that like if I am resting on my laurels, if I am not doing every single thing to stay in fit spiritual condition, or to work my program, I'm gonna lose it, and I don't do everything perfectly. I don't do everything perfectly. I don't do, and I always say, like, I don't work a perfect program, but I work an honest program, because that's the most important thing for me. It's honesty and transparency in all my affairs. And I was just I just recently switched sponsors, because my sponsor, who I had for 3 years, who had like 20 something years of recovery, just relapsed. This is, it's a deadly disease, and I always say, like, it wants to kill me, but it will certainly, be happy with just keeping me miserable. And the more miserable I am, the sooner I'm going to go out. The more I feed that hamster wheel of misery, whatever it is, the sooner I'll go out. And I do just want to share some pictures really quickly. Okay. The top left with me in that wonderful striped shirt is before recovery. I think that was probably one of my top weights, which was 250 pounds. The middle picture with my husband was right before the pandemic. The world shut down like a week later. And then on the baseball mom shirt is the day that I came back in February of 2021, and that was at 242 pounds. The pictures in the dress, the one picture is me in Vegas when I was in Vegas right before the pandemic at my sister's wedding. And then the other one is in 2022 at my son's wedding. This you know, being in recovery, you tend to get into a circle of people, and I have found people, and these people like to run for some reason. And so I decided to join them and ran my first 5K this past October with my son, by the way, with my 18-year-old son, who I would not have a relationship with if I wasn't in this program. And then that's just me last year at this time. So, and you know, I am able to do all of those things because every single day I do something for my recovery. And but that was not always the case. You know, it just wasn't. I was constantly wanting to run the show. And I liked what the speaker just said too about following the script, you know. I get really mad when people are not following my script, and nobody, I feel like nobody in my immediate household follows my script how I want them to follow it. And if I stay at, for me, if I stay in that constant anger and resentment because they're not following my script, I will eat. Those were always the reasons to eat. Those were always my reasons to eat. They were always my reasons to go back out. You know, so and so isn't doing what I want to do. This kid pissed me off. This kid is doing this. You know, and I remember when I came back in 2021, everything that I had bitched and moaned and complained about and relapsed over was in the past had been fine. You know, like my marriage was better, the kids and I were better, our finances were better. And I couldn't stop eating. And I was like, you know, what do you mean? My life is perfect. I'm not understanding this. And really, because I was in relapse and I wasn't willing to put everything down, you know, I wasn't willing to put all the alcoholic foods down and give myself to this program no matter what. I mean, I don't care what somebody said to do, I had to do it. And I wasn't willing. And I can lose the willingness really, 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 really easily. Because, you know, Amber's will always sounds like a good idea. It really does. I mean, because that's the disease. That's the disease. It's not really even Amber's will. It's the disease, you know, that's talking to me in my own voice that's saying, do this. Why don't you do this? You don't need to follow that instruction. You know better. And you know that voice, it can be so loud at times. It can be so loud, and I'm grateful today that it is not loud with the food, but that doesn't mean that it's not always loud with other actions. And I feel like I'm all over the place. But I, when in 2023, you know, somebody was giving me direction. I didn't want to take it. That person's on this meeting right now. I did not want to take it. You know, they gave me a direction to some with a certain food, and I wanted more. You know, I have the disease of wanting more, but where did that creep in at? I don't, you know, like how did it just get there? Well, it didn't just get there. It was I wasn't getting up for my phone calls with my sponsor. I wasn't reading the book. I wasn't, you know, making outreach calls. I wasn't talking about whatever the hell was my head was talking about. You know, those are my prelapse warning signs. You know, if I am not doing what I need to do on a regular basis, I'm gonna relapse. I will. You know, that's just who I am. And you know, I wish I could say that like I came in here and I got it, but I didn't. And I don't. And you know, they always say in the big book, you know, you don't regret the past, nor is to shut the door on it. I don't regret my relapses. I mean, I It was painful. It was painful. I don't wish that upon anybody, but it also took what it took for me to sit my ass down and listen and do whatever was asked of me. And that's pain. Pain is my motivator. Doesn't matter what it is, emotional, physical, whatever. If I'm not in pain, I'm not going to go to the doctor. If I'm not in enough emotional pain, I'm not going to move. Right now I'm in a lot of emotional pain. I have so much change going on in my life, and I recently started with a new sponsor because my sponsor had relapsed. And all I can do is stay close here. As long as I stay in this room, as long as I do what I did yesterday, I'll be abstinent today. And I really do believe that it is as simple as that sentence is, if I do what I did yesterday, I'll be abstinent today. Because today's all I got. And I know that, I know that. But right now I'm going through a lot of emotional stuff. It's another, I don't know. I mean, in this program, I feel like, I'm an onion, and I get peeled one layer at a time. And right now, that I peeled another layer, and it's not comfortable. I'm not comfortable at all right now. So I've been reaching out, and I've been reaching out to other things, and but not like other things, and like, well, they started to get destructive. They started to get destructive, and that started to scare me. And I was like, if I keep going down this rabbit hole, pretty soon the food's gonna go. The food is going to go. I know that. I know that for myself. And so I started a new program. And it's, I mean, it is what it is. It is what it is. It takes what it takes. And that's what I know today, is that it takes what it takes. Whatever it takes for me to stay in recovery is what I need to do, because I don't want to go back to the hell that I was in 2021. I don't want to go back there at all. And so, I'm working on staying in fit spiritual condition, because I remember I was abstinent. I was really sober in 2008. I had lost the majority of my weight. I had had my third son in program. I had lost the majority of the weight, but I started letting up. Like, I call it chipping away at my program. I started chipping away, and I started staying in that anger and resentment. I like what Ori said. I'd be a millionaire too. Oh my God. I mean, like, if I could, in there again. But you know what? Staying in the anger and resentment doesn't make me happy. It just feeds that disease. It feeds my disease. And the more food I'm getting, it the stronger it's getting, and the more it's going to take me out. And I really realized, like, I was really living in the anger and resentment, and I'm like, I don't want to be there anymore. I don't want to be there anymore. And so, I'm working on getting out of there. And I was telling somebody today, I said, if, she was like, oh, good for you, I'm glad you. And I was like, if I don't do this, it's gonna take me out. It's gonna take me out. I know that. Because I am self-centered to the extreme. I think it's all about me. And if people are not following me and my script and bowing down to me and telling me what a great mother I am and a great wife and every other fucking thing, I am not happy. So, I have to go somewhere else to get in check, to get in check. But, like I said, I just have to stay close. I have to stay close to my recovery circle. I don't, I mean, I'm on a meeting almost every day, just about every day, 'cause that's what it takes. Somebody in program said that, my head is not the playground that I want to play on today. And I love that saying, and I say it a lot, and that is me, 'cause my head is crazy, and it wakes up like that. So pretty much, I do some reading, I do some writing, and I get right on a meeting to calm the craziness down. And then, I can go without my day. I start my, I start my program. I start my breakfast. I take pictures of my food. I send it off. I do all these crazy things. I do all these crazy things just so I don't eat, just so I don't eat. Just so I can keep the relationships that I have, with the people that I love. I mean, I always say, like, I'm not, yeah, maybe I came in, for the weight, I mean, I'm sure, but like, now I'm here for my mind. Now I'm here for my relationships. Now I'm here so I don't, so I have a relationship, hopefully, God willing, someday with my children, when they're grown. That's what I want, and I'm so grateful that I am sober right now. My son's going off to college and I'm sober and I'm feeling it and it sucks, but I'm not eating. When my first son went away to college, I was soberish, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. I was guilt tripping. I was doing all of these things that, were not recovery. They were not they were not the mom that I wanted to be, but I didn't know any different. Until I got out of the food, until I was no longer in relapse, I didn't know any different. And but like I said, the chipping away at my program, that's typically the first. The second I say, I don't need to share that, or I don't need to go to a meeting today. I don't, it's okay if I didn't write or read today. It's okay if I didn't make an outreach call today. If when I start signing on to that BS, I'm gonna go out. I'm gonna go out. And I've been, like I said, I've been in here since 2005. The roller coaster ride, it was very, very long, and it wasn't fun, and I don't recommend it, but recovery is possible. You don't have to be in relapse. You don't have to keep going either. You don't have to keep going flip-flopping. I flip-flopped for so many years. For so many years, I flip-flopped. And, you don't have to. You don't have to. But you do have to do what you're told. You do have to do what you're told and not what you want to do. And not even, and I don't even like the whole praying for the willingness to be willing and whatever. Like, if I could have done that, I would have. I could have, that's like praying to lose the weight and not stop eating for me. I couldn't do that. I can't pray for the willingness. I cannot do that. I have to just do it and hope that I get some kind of that just comes natural more, because I can't pray for the willingness to be willing. It just didn't work for me. I had to just put the food down and say,
Give it a
okay,
timbre.
thank you. And just say, okay, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do. Okay, I'm in enough pain. I will do whatever you want me to do. And and I'm glad that I got in that much pain. I really am, because I'm here today. And I get to live a life that I never thought that I would have. 'Cause I'm 51. I thought I would be dead by now. I really did. When I came back in, I had high cholesterol. My knees were killing me. I was taking, I don't even know how much tramadol every single night so I could sleep, because my back was killing me. I was, when I came into program, I was diabetic, high cholesterol, and fatty liver disease. And that was before I was 30. I don't have good genes. So I'm not living in the obese body. I'm not. I'm gonna die. And so the fact that I'm here today, that I am, that I'm here today. I've been married for 25 years. I have three boys. The fact that I'm here to tell that, is huge. The man's a saint for staying with me. Because it hasn't been easy. My kids are saints because they, have not said, screw this lady, I'm done with her. And I pray that that continues. That's all I got, that's all I got. And that's but today I don't want to die, and so I'm here. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Amber. It's been really great traveling this road with you through sobriety and abstinence. We are going to start with our final speaker. Everyone, please help me introduce Tim C.
Hey Tim, how would you like your time?
18 and 2 is perfect. Thank you.
Awesome.
Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. Back from relapse, abstinent 17 years and down 102 pounds as of this month. Now I'll share a couple quick pictures, and we will get right into the old prelapse. One more. This is the guy that prelapses each and every time. This is the guy that's in a fight with the world. This is the guy that wants to do it his way. And I think Amber really kind of summarized it really nicely of, I need to be told what to do. I need to, on my own, I always find a way back to food. I am without defense against the first bite, right? That's so clear. Ore, thank you so much for all the different readings. The one that jumped out to me was in the doctor's opinion that was, however, this is on the last page of the doctor's opinion. However, he did become sold on the ideas contained in this book. And I like Ohio State football. I like college football. And I like watching those kids come from high school to college. And the people that buy in to what the coaches are laying down tend to be very, they tend to advance and they tend to hit the peak of where they can. Some of them have the athletic ability to go on and play for the NFL. Others, they will just max out at college. But when they buy in to what the coach is telling them, and they just do what they are asked to do. And that's a leap of faith. That is truly a leap of faith. And for me, it took the beating that it took to get me ready to say, I will do whatever you say. Because it really, for me, relapse is always a step one issue. It is, whether I don't think there's it's an alcoholic food or that I can control and enjoy it still. Maybe there was one time that I could control and enjoy it, but I can no longer control and enjoy it, or it becomes a management issue, right? It becomes that I think I can navigate my life the way I want to manage my life. And it's always the yes, but it's always, yes, I'll do this, but I'm going to do it in the way that I want to do it. I'm going to frame it any way that I want to do it. And so for me, if I can just get a quick show of hands from everybody who has done the steps and relapsed. Okay. So the steps, so this is good. So the steps are not necessarily the solution, right? That's really, it's important. Doing the steps is not the thing. It is getting access to something. Right? It is getting access to a power greater than myself to stop me from doing something I don't want to do. Right? So I've got this allergy of the body, of the obsession of this mind. I've got a twofold disease, right? I've got this mind that is obsessive. It loves to obsess. It likes to think about things over and over and over. And when it gets, and it'll do it on anything. It will do it. I mean, I remember one time yelling at my sponsor because people were sending me gratitude lists. That gratitude is a bunch of horse shit. Right. And that's, I don't believe in it. I don't believe this. You're my actions tell me everything. You're not grateful. You complain about everything, but yet you're right. Right. I mean, I was beside myself and he goes, Tim, it's a prayer. I'm like, oh, okay, good. Perfect. That's it. That's enough. But I can, my mind starts to track on anything. Right. But when it gets turned to food, I am now looking for a way to take that first bite. I am now looking for a way and understand it never stops. It never stops. I have this mind that tilted towards food. It never stops. And then I've got this body that once I put it in will never ever let me stop. I've got a mind that never lets me rest and a body that won't let me die. I've got these two things. And this mind is always going to walk me back. You know what? It was explained one time that it's like a feedback loop, right? It's a microphone. You're always going to, I always tend to stick the microphone too damn close to the speaker. And what does it do? It goes, and then I need somebody to drag me away. And then it goes fine, but I always find a way back. I just keep wandering and keep getting closer. And the only way to stop myself from doing something I don't want to do anymore are the 12 steps and the spiritual principles in the book. It's so very important. It is so very important that I get access to a power greater than myself. Now, steps 1 through 9 are wonderful, wonderful steps. They are wonderful steps. They are critical that I clean out the wreckage of my past, but that's all that really, that's all we're talking about really there. 10, 11, and 12 for me are the killers. These are the ones that I don't want to do because this is a transformation of my life. This is a transformation. Number one, 10 steps all about your feelings. 10 step is all about my feelings, and the 11th step is all about my thinking. Right. So those are the two things. Those are the two things that, because you don't hear people say, well, it was a great day and I just ate. No. Once you've been through the steps, it's like I'm frustrated. People aren't doing. We heard people talking about people aren't doing it my way. My kids aren't doing this. My wife's not doing this. The economy's not doing that. Whatever it is. And all of a sudden I need relief. And what brings me relief? Food. Right. Food always did. It wasn't the problem creator. It was the problem solver. It's so very important. Right, I'm not look. I'm look. The thing that brings me pain eventually brings me pain is the thing that brings you relief immediately, right? So the 10th step, right? This is the I'm the watcher, right? The 10th step asked me to be the watcher, and what am I watching for? My feelings. I'm looking for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. Those are all feelings. Resentment is get out of my way, or it give me my way, right? Self-seeking is get out of my way. Right? These are feelings. The dishonesty is I want my way, and when I get my way, I'll be happy. Right? That's the biggest lie in the world. When I get what I want, when it's the $1 million, when the kids dance for me, when the wife does this for me, when the economy and the weather and the traffic, when it all works perfectly for me, I can be happy. And that's so dishonest because nothing ever made me happy. That guy, this the greater aspect of my disease. This guy right here, this guy that we all know and love right here. He what he called. He is always with me. He is never going away. I can now I he does not get a say. I don't get to spill him out on the world anymore, right? And that's about discipline. That is about discipline. That is about taking my when my feelings come up, this is when I turn to my God. God, please take this from me. I can't handle it. I can't, God, please take this. I can't handle it. Then I'm on the phone. I'm on the phone before I'm talking to anybody else. This is the 10th step. I know lots of people in the program say, well, I'm doing a 10 step. Well, I might have to do 85 10 steps in a day, depending on the day. Because this is about my feelings. And I can do a lot of damage throughout the day if I don't check my feelings when they come up. It's not the 10 step is not at the end of the day. That's the 11 step review. And we'll get into that. We'll get into that in a couple minutes, right? So I got to keep now because I can be a sunbeam from God, me and you just talking. But guess what? I got to go take this out on the dance floor. When my wife just spent too much money, we got 85 Amazon boxes sitting at the door. We got perfume coming in from Sephora and Lush and all this. And I'm like, what do we need this stuff for, guys? I have no idea. Your dad hasn't worked in 6 months. What are we doing? You know, but I guess what? I get to say, let me call somebody about that. Right? So I make the call. I'm just saying, hey, I'm really afraid. I'm afraid that this, I am, hey, Tim, how much money? You got money in the bank today? Yeah, good. You got food? Good, good. Call me tomorrow if you run out. Click. And that's what I love those guys. Those are my hammers. Those are the guys that they're not going to go, oh, it's maybe you can have a good conversation with your wife about this and express your feelings and she'll stop doing that. No. Hey, you got money in the bank? Okay, good. There we go. Hang it up. And then my thoughts to turn to someone I can help. Because the gift that was given to me 17 years ago was what he called it was given to me. I was an asshole. I was that kid. I was that guy, that frayed little boy. That was 17 years ago, 17 and 5 days ago, and four, and something happened on May the 5th, 2009. I did not have to eat. I don't know what, and it wasn't under my hand. Now, it took me about 15 years to stop taking credit for that, right? That's what happened to me. One day I was unwilling to do things. The next day I was said, just tell me what I was sold. I was sold that somebody had something that I wanted, and I was like, you just point the direction and I will do it, right? And this 10, 11, and 12 keep me lined up. keep me lined up. It keeps me reading the same books he's reading, doing the same thing he's doing, acting the same way he's acting, right? Because all of a sudden now my way goes by the side. It still comes back, but I'm starting to get the feel of it. I feel it come up without saying anything about it, right? So the 10th step helps me with my feelings. Now the 11th step, love it, right? What I constructively retire at night and I constructively review my day. I look back and I say, hey man, I don't destructively do it. I like that. I like to beat myself up. I'm a piece of shit. I didn't do it perfectly. And that's destructive. And then I just want to ignore it instead of just saying, hey, that could have been done better. Okay, you know what? I got an amends to make there. I'm gonna clean that up because I got to keep that channel to God clean. I got to keep going to power. I got to keep going to power. That's the only thing that's gonna keep me absent is power. And so that's what is in the 10 step. I do that 10 step review, and then when I wake up in the morning, it's telling me I don't even get off the couch for a page. There is a whole page of directions, and you haven't even gotten up off the couch yet. And it's all about how do you deal with your mind. Because my mind tends towards obsession, and what it obsesses towards is I'm not getting what I want, because I have many more experiences about not getting what I want. I have so many more experiences of not getting what I want than getting what I do want. So what does it do? It starts to constantly track on. Oh, I got to avoid this situation. Oh, you know what? If you just say it this way, she'll spend less. Now I'm back into people pleasing, and what the people that I hang out with they call it manipulation. You still just want what you want, and you'll let them run all over you to get what you want. That's manipulation. Instead of just letting them spend the money, hey, listen, when it's gone, it's gone. And when it comes back, it's supposed to come back. You know? Now, how do you want to live? Because this is all going on up in your mind. It's all in your mind. You got the money today, that's all you need to worry about. Right? And so it's all in your mind. And this is about disciplining the mind. This is about looking at the mind and saying, hey, wait a minute, I'm in charge here. I'm in charge here. I'm going to sit down for this meditation. Listen, I might not be able to control my mind today. I might. And when I began, I sat right over in that chair right there, and it went wild. It went nuts. It refused to sit still. But my body, I'm in charge of that. Because if my hand started slapping me in the face, I'd do something about it. But I let my mind run rampant. I let my mind do all sorts of immature things. And I begin to say, whoa, 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 I'm in charge here. We're going to sit still. We're going to sit still. We're going to sit quietly for 5 minutes. And that's what we're going to do. That's the beginning of discipline. This is because that's what God is asking me to do. Hey, wait a minute. I need help disciplining my mind. And this is what I do. And can you direct my thinking towards service? Because it says, hey, before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. We ask God to direct our thinking, asking it to be divorced from selfish. Self, you know, the same four character defects. You don't need to go find your character defects. The book tells you to, right? And then all of a sudden, now all I live this disciplined type of life. It became slow. It became very slow, right? And then 12, service. Sir, well past what I think my wife likes. But I didn't ask. Guess what? I didn't ask. I mean, listen, it is what it is, you know? I mean, hey, when she needs to have that conversation, I can listen. I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I'm open to that discussion. I didn't ask for permission. I just said I asked my sponsor, where do you want me to go? Well, this is what we're doing. Okay, let's go. And that's what and it's grown, right? This to me has continued. This is all how much of God do you want? How much power do you want? This is an entirely individual journey. Because after the ninth step, the instructions are in the book, but you don't do them with other people. You don't do them with other people. This is how much of God do you want? How free do you want to be? How much do you want to let your wife be your wife? How much do you want to let your kids be your kids? How much do you want to let the bank account be the bank account? How free do you want to be? Because it's all there. It's only your mind that's telling you, I'm not doing this, and this is not enough, and I'm afraid of this, and I'm afraid. It's your obsessive mind. And that has to be, I have to awaken to the fact that, wait a minute, this may or may not be real, but I'm acting on the world as if it's real. I'm starting to retreat from opportunities. I'm starting to think about what I'm going to say. No, they're going to think I'm this, and listen, that's not freedom. Now, I might be crazy, but you actually, this is probably in this journey, you probably got to know the real Tim. You pro this is you get to know the real Tim. I used to be able to tell you I could give good share. I could really give good share, and I could make you impressed, and everybody be clapping, and there'd be hearts all over the place, and there'd be fireworks and all that stuff. But and I really don't care, because guess what? You got to know me, and this is what's happened, and this has been my experience. And so for me, what the 12th step does is circle me back to step one. It circles me back to step one. I sponsor lots of men and women, and I really it is a pleasure. It is a pleasure because what it does is it's like a clock on the wall. It takes me back. It takes me back to one. It takes me back to one. It takes me back to my powerlessness, lack of manageability, because they're calling me. They're calling me and they're going, "Well, Tim, this is going on and it's not right and it's good." Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, hold on. Here we go. Okay. I'm glad you're making the call. I want to try to always be the cheerleader. You're making the call. You're doing the right thing. Did you eat over it? No, you did. That's number two. You're doing great work. You're doing great work. And then so all, and now I get to be free, right? In that service. For me, it is always a step one issue. I am screwed. I have McDonald's is waiting for me. If I want to stop, if I want to pause, if I want to go, well, I'm too busy for this. And understand, I don't know where on this journey for me, where this passion and this zeal came for this way of living. I don't know, because this is not who that's who I was. That guy right there, that guy that was fighting the world. I try not to fight anybody. I try not to be critical of anybody, whether it's my wife or whether it's the kids. You know, they're not doing it right either. But they're just doing it their right way. It really is. I don't look fatherhood as molding my kids. I look at it as I'm being the cheerleader. Hey, guess what? You're going to make mistakes. It's guaranteed. By the way, it is built in. You can live with your mistakes. I'm not here to help you avoid those mistakes. I'm here to help you. When you make the mistakes, I'm here to embrace you, get you on your way, and keep you moving down. And that's the way I look at sponsorship too. I used to be very critical of people. I used to argue and bully people. I was a big bully. And because it was based out of fear. It was based out of that I had done something and you should be able to do something. And the fact is, the gift was given to me. And it might not be given to everybody. There are men that have died. There are women that died. There are the 20-year person that went out and relapsed might not ever make it back. My last thinking was, oh, it'll just be one donut one day. And it was 5 years and 100 pounds later before I was willing to come back, before the gift was given to me again. So for me, I protect the gift. I am sold on the idea of continuing, seeking, and carrying. And I'll tell you what, I've never been more willing than May the 5th, 2009. I would have done what I just was so tired of being me. I was so tired of being me. I hated me. And I mean, because I was just an animal and I fought everybody. Everywhere I turned, it was just like it's another fight. And people love me. I mean, my wife loved me. I work and all that stuff. And I could not stop fighting it. And I said, I will do whatever you do. And now understand I have never been more willing than that day. The willingness continues to decline. That's just the way it is. The only thing that keeps that buoyed and on the surface and is a piece of business every day is what I do. So the rigors of 10, 11, and 12 keep the buoy floating. Because if it sinks below the horizon and stops presenting itself as a serious piece of business, the game will begin again. And it's just guaranteed I will be drawn towards the food and I will be without defense. This is a power game. And I always thought it would be money, women, success, notoriety, all those things that I thought would give me what I thought to be okay. And the fact is, there's nothing out there. There's nothing outside of me that's going to give me anything of value. It all must come. It is the journey inward and the forgiveness and the love and the acceptance of everything that happened to me. Everything that happened to, there was lots of things that happened to me and lots of things that I did. And I tried to clean all that up. And my past is the greatest asset that I have. It is truly a gift. To be free of the old story, because this is a better, this is a way of life
Two
that it's
minutes.
not too perfect. Thank you. It is a way of life that has infinitely more joy and more passion and more love and more excitement. It's like, what's going to happen today? Because if I can just fit myself to it, it's exciting as hell. By the way, this is the only place in the universe that this shit is going on. This is the Disneyland of the universe. We've looked at Mars. There's nothing. There's not even a cockroach on Mars. That's not even exciting. This is all going on here. We got birds, we got cats, we got traffic, we got all sorts of shit going on. If I can just look at it that way, that this is the most exciting planet on the Earth or in the universe that we found. This is the only place it's all going on. Oh my goodness. And it's a little too hot, guys. It's a little too, I don't have enough money to see the Great Falls and this and that. Oh my goodness. It's right. I just have to look out the door. I just have to look at my kids as a miracle. I did nothing to create them. They have their journey with their higher power. And now can I just watch it? Can I enjoy it? And the prelapse starts with, I'm not going to do the work. I'm not going to go to the meetings. I'm going to do self-sufficiency. Ori pointed that out so clearly. The self-sufficiency. I alone eat no matter what. I eat no matter what. You leave me unprotected and unguarded without my fellowship, I eat. I can't take that directly to God. I get to God through you. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you for everything you do, and I hope your wife knows how much we appreciate her letting you be this much of service. It's very important to all of us. Thank you to all three of our speakers, Ore, Amber, and Tim. I am going to post in the chat a link to our seventh tradition. So if you can, please donate at your comfort level. And I have asked Danielle to read the 12 traditions, and I am going to post them right now.
All right. Hi, my name is Danielle. I'm a compulsive overeater, and these are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Danielle, for being a service. And again, thank you to all our speakers. For the rest of this time, and we have another 53 minutes, we're going to open this up for a question and answer. If you have a question around prelapse, around relapse, around something that you heard the speakers share today, please raise your hand. I'll call on you. You can ask your question, and all three of the speakers, or just one of them, however they'd like to do that, can address that question. Who and I would really like to encourage everyone to raise their hand and answer a question, because I think that the what we heard today, in addition to, their experience with relapse and being in this program, working these steps, can be vital for people who are struggling. And that's the big purpose of this workshop, is to be as helpful as possible. So I'm going to open it up for whoever would like to ask a question. All right, Marge, take it away.
They say there's never a silly question. First of all, thank you all three for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. It was awesome. I just have a question. Tim, you said 10th step is about feelings. 12th step is service. What was the 11th step?
The 11th step is our thinking.
Okay, thank you. And I'll.
Thank you very much, Marge. I just realized that the chat was not open. So hopefully now the chat is open. And if you would like to post something, hopefully everyone can see the seventh tradition link as well. Terry, you're up.
Hi, everyone. I'm Terry. I'm compulsive overeater. I apologize for the noise in the background. There's a machine in my garage going on. This isn't exactly, I don't think anybody addressed the issue that I want to talk about. There was the discussion of feelings. And I just wanted to see if any of you, any of the three of you, have ever experienced trauma in your childhood or in your past, and how that has related, or how you've dealt with that while walking through abstinence and staying abstinent in 12 steps.
Okay, so if I'm hearing correctly, the question is dealing with trauma from the past while working the 12 steps. Is that right?
Staying
Okay.
abstinent with
staying,
it. Yes.
Staying abstinent with it. Okay. Ori, Amber, or Tim, whoever would like to take that question first.
I grew up in a very violent home. It's funny. I was just thinking about this. I wet the bed until I went to college. You know, it was just a very, you know, just a, it was a, it was a tough upbringing. And for me, my father was on my inventory for about 7 or 8 years, for a long time. Probably it was 5 or 6 inventories until it kind of, until I was a, until I, until it was shown me, till it was, you know, I didn't do any of it. I was shown that, oh my goodness, I could do the same thing. I could do the same thing. And that's in the big book, it asked me to look at it and say, you know, how people really dominated me. And and it was just a story, the way I told it to myself so many times. I have this obsessive thinking. Every time I told myself the story, it got farther and farther away from reality. You know, it is a version of the truth, but it is not the truth. The version that I told myself and that I wrote down in that inventory, and it was the right place at the right time, and all of a sudden it just unlocked my heart. And I'm more than happy to go into it, but it's kind of a long story. I'm more than happy you can call me anytime, but it is the 4-step resentment, that resentment inventory, and the instructions here in the big book exactly. I mean, it really does lay it out exactly how you go about letting go of that old story. And I'm more than happy anytime.
Thank you, Tim. Ori or Amber, do you want to add anything? Okay. Oh. All right. Well, Terry, thank you very much for the question. All right. Amy S. from Houston.
Hey, I'm Amy, compulsive overeater. Thank you, Ori, Amber, Tim. But my question's actually to you, Chris. Because it was right at the very beginning where you were talking about what prelapse is, and you said it's kind of an accepted and vital concept, an internal drift, and you talked about three things: isolating, missing meetings, and I missed the third one. Do you remember what it was? I mean, I kind of get the concept.
Yes, so that was the early indicators of relapse, which we are colloquially calling prelapse. Skipping meetings, isolating, and harboring resentments.
Harboring resentment. Oh, where did that one go to? I just forgot it. Okay, I guess I can form a question from that then. Well, no, my question's more about the honesty. Amber, I really appreciated when you said honesty and transparency are kind of the keys to your program. Because that's where I am too. I sometimes worry about that constitutionally incapable of being honest. with themselves. And then I go, wait a minute, I know what the truth is. I just have a damn hard time telling it. Is that a process or am I just a chicken? I guess that's the big question. Can honesty be a process that we grow in? Because I keep getting 30 days, 90 days, 40 days, 22 days, 100 days. And I want it to be no more relapse, prelapse. That's all I got. Thank you.
So if I understand correctly, Amy, just so I know, the question is honesty, can it be a process? Or is it what was the other thing you asked?
Is it a process or is it just haven't, or is it a one-time event? Is it absolute? That's what.
Gotcha. Is honesty a process or a one-time event? Amber, do you want to begin?
Sure. One, I learned to lie when I was a kid. Lying is like breathing for me, and so and it was modeled and it was approved and all of those things. And then plus I also had to lie constantly about my food. So learning to not lie was really I struggled with that in the beginning. And then I realized the more I didn't want to tell the truth, it was my ego. I didn't want to look bad. I didn't want to feel bad. I didn't want to look bad. I didn't want to and I always say it like that, I can't save my ass and my face at the same time. And so now I tell the truth no matter how I'm going to look. Doesn't matter. Because I want to look good. Don't get me wrong. I always want to look good and I always want to paint myself the better person in the picture. But that's not always who I am. And so the more I say what I did or who I am or whatever, you'll see me on this, on a meeting and I will tell the ugly about me. And it's not so I can get some kind of praise or whatever, but it's because if I can't tell you, I'm not going to be able to tell that person I'm sorry over there. I have to be honest here. This is where I get to practice it. I get to practice it in these rooms and with everybody on this screen, I get to practice being honest. And I remember, I had to also in the beginning when I came back in 2021, I had to get comfortable with the fact that if my sponsor dropped me because I did something wrong, then they dropped me. Even though that wasn't the case, but that was what the disease was telling me. Well, you lied or you did it wrong. You were not doing it perfect, so he's just going to say you're not abstinent and you're done. And that wasn't the case, but I had to be honest and I had to be okay with the fact of how scared I was to be honest. I'm always that scared little girl. I'm always that scared little girl. I'm an adult now, I'm not going to get in trouble for anything. But that's what my disease tells me. My disease tells me that lie. And so the more transparent I can be with that, it's been easier, but I had to start telling the little white lies, like I know you told me that I was supposed to cook my food this way, but I cooked it this way instead. Should I throw it out? That was a big thing. And I had to be okay with if he said, yeah, throw it out.
I'll call back when I can.
That like it was okay, and I had to be okay with whatever somebody else said. I'm not in charge anymore. And so, but I'm a liar. I'm a liar. I'm a thief. I'm a cheat. You name it. That's where the disease has taken me. And so every single day in this program, I get to work something different. I get to try it differently with everyone in this room. That's all I got.
Thank you, Amber. Ore or Tim, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, The book does say grasp and develop, right? So you're developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty, right? And I just want to maybe frame it a little differently. So, Amy, so what is the fear of when you tell the truth, right? Of living honestly. What is your fear?
Rejection,
Right.
isolation,
But
dying.
right, but so but that has not happened yet, right?
Correct.
Okay, so it's really important, right, that we be shown that the story that you tell yourself is not true, right? It's so I have to really be pulled out and said, hey, wait a minute, this is you're not telling the truth, and I've all and we've always treated you, or the people in your life have always treated you with respect, and a mistake was made, and okay, let's begin again. It's not like you're an idiot. And you need to go away and hide shamefully, right? But that's what we think, right? That and so we have to, I want you to actually register that no, they didn't treat me that way. That might have been the way that I was treated, right? But this is not the way they're treating me. And then it'll be easier to develop that habit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Or do you want to add anything? Okay. Amy, I will just say very quickly, it started the honesty started on my plate. That's exactly it. Just started the honesty started on my plate, and then it just moved to everything else. And that is the last I will add. Thank you for the question. Danielle, you're up.
All right. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much to the leads. Two quick questions. One is, Tim, you mentioned resentment, selfishness, honesty, dishonesty, and fear. And then you like said something about them, and I wasn't fast enough. Can you repeat what you said? It was like, I
Yeah, I mean,
want,
here, let's just go make sure, because I can misquote this stuff all the time. It's we watch, we become the watcher, right? This is a 10-step way of life. We become the watcher. We continue to watch for selfishness, which is I want my way. Dishonesty is when I get my way, I'll be happy. I don't think many of us have to deal, some of us, I had to deal with cash register dishonesty, but the biggest dishonesty in my life is if I get what I want, I will be happy. That's the biggest lie I tell myself. If they would just do it my way, they will be happy, right? So dishonesty, resentment is you're not doing it my way. And fear is I'm afraid I won't get my way. So these are all feelings, and that's really the 10 step to me is I've got to address my feelings right now. I can do a lot of damage if I wait till the end of the night.
thank you very much. And then one more question. Have you in your current, all of you, have you ever noticed signs of prelapse in your current recovery right now? And what specifically did you notice for each of you?
What were the signs of prelapse in your current recovery, if you've experienced any of that?
Yeah, like did you notice something and you're like, oh shit, like I better. What was it that you noticed?
Yeah,
What did you do?
yeah. So there have been many there like there have been moments where I mean I didn't tag it as prelapse, but it motivated me like to course correct for sure. So there was a time where we went through a big event, like a it was a cybersecurity event. I'm in tech, and it was a major event that happened to us. And I worked for a big organization, and had political ramifications, all kind of things. And I was working like almost like 12 to 14-hour days in the recovery process, the recovery effort, and like I was literally like working, going home, sleeping, getting up, and it that became a top priority for me. And like I had missed a few of the men's meetings. Like there were a lot of calls going to red. Oh, that's a big one right there. If I'm looking at my missed calls and there is a lot of red, that's an issue. If and my sponsor texted me, and he was just like, "Where are you?" And that's all he said. And like, there are very few moments where my sponsor is like, "Where are you at?" Like, if he's not seeing me, that's a problem. And I had like, it for some reason that text, like, "Oh, he's not seeing me." That's a problem. I had to expose that. And of course there are always moments where it's just like, oh, it's been 5 days since my last writing. Like, what's going on here? Or, my sponsees are I'm not working, I'm not actively taking somebody through to work. That's a danger moment for me. Or like I'm fighting the measurements of my food plan. Like, I'm finding myself perpetually disappointed in the amounts that I have. Like, that's a red flag. So there's a bunch of red flags. Like, oh, my meetings have dropped. I only went to three meetings this week when I usually average five. That's a red flag. If I find myself continuously in bother and fighting something, that's a red flag. Like, why is my peace off? Like, what's going on? So there's always red flags that that I have to pay attention to. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Ore. Tim or Amber, do you want to add anything?
I will. I like a lot what Ori said. If I'm not doing, the things that I have to do, which, or if I'm putting something above it all, there have been many times where I didn't think that I could fit. I was constantly trying to fit program into my life instead of my life into my program, or if I'm supposed to reverse it, whatever. But that was always a big thing for me. That I was trying to do it all, and when I mean by all, meaning like do this crazy life or whatever, and then try to get to a meeting or try to prepare my food or try to whatever. It's like, no, this is this box. This is the most important box I have, and let's see how much of over here I can put into this box. I can't do it the other way. And for years and years and years, I tried to do it the other way, where it was like, okay, I'll get to a meeting if I can, or I'll go to what, and I can't do that. And I, when I relapsed in 2023, I the only thing I can say is that I remember, like a little bit what Ori touched on, where it was like I was not answering calls, I was not talking about how I was feeling. I there was a big part of where I thought like I got this, I think there was a big part of it where it was like I got this, my son had just gotten married, and there was some things that were going on in my marriage. There was the and I was not paying attention. I was not talking about it. I was not talking about it because I wanted to look good. I wanted to look good. And that's where I think where I've really, really, really just come to that point where it's like, I don't care. I don't care how shitty I look. I don't care how bad, it portrays on these little squares, I have to talk about it. And then the food, I mean, we always say the food is the last to go. And that was for sure. I know that I was not getting up for meetings, and I was not like, and I was just sort of like, I always call it chipping away, whatever I was doing that was working, and then all of a sudden I just start, like slowly, not doing those things, and yeah, so that's all I have.
Chris, if I could say one more thing, Danielle, like something that was also, I found myself at a point in recovery where I was giving a lot of help. I was of service. A lot of people were telling me their secrets, but I wasn't telling anyone my secrets. And that was something that was a ref, like it like God inspired thinking, like, oh, this is a setup where I'm Mr. OA and doing all this service, but I'm not telling anyone what's going on with me, not even consciously, but I could see my ego setting me up. So that's another rep, and I had to start getting honest at a deeper level. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Danielle, for the question. Thank you, guys. Tim, do you want to add anything or no?
They did great. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, next up, Michelle R.
I thank you all for putting on this workshop. My question combines a thought from both Amber and Ore. Amber, you talked about this idea of praying for willingness, to be willing, to be willing. And I have done that. And Ore, you talked about, you said surrender is an essential discipline and a reduced ego or self-will has recuperative power. So what I'm wondering is this whole idea of praying for willingness to be willing to be willing? I've heard it gone down a whole line. Is that just evidence of me not wanting to give up my ego, like me fighting against what I know I'm supposed to be doing and waiting for some kind of magic, thought process to bring me to the idea of recovery. And I'd be interested in hearing both of your thoughts on that.
So, oh, did you catch the question, Ore?
Yeah, I did. I did. And Michelle, I think one thing that changed for my recovery this time around was I don't know where this came from, but well, I mean, it was clearly God. Like this time around, it was installed in me this ability to hear what I was saying and then just experiment with another way. Like it was like, okay, I'm used to my bullshit and I get it. Like it was like inside of me. I could feel it like I get it, bro. But let me just try something different. Let me just experiment and take the action that somebody is suggesting. It's like it was I didn't have anything to lose. I could always go back to my misery. Like just try a different way. Like I don't have to strong arm myself or muscle myself into changing my behavior. Like let me just experiment with it. Let me just try it for one day. Let me just do it one time. And if for some reason that was really helpful for me.
Amber,
Thank
would
you.
you like to add to that?
Sure. I had a sponsor tell me that I was either going to surrender to recovery or I was going to surrender to the disease, but I was going to surrender to one of them. And which one did I want to choose? And so, I chose to surrender to recovery. And I always thought like that was like, like the whole war thing and you're waving the white flag, like I surrender, I surrender. You got me, and yet the more I looked at it, it was like I was surrendering every single day to something that was making me miserable, and I could just say okay over here and maybe something would change, but when I say like pray for the willingness, how do I say that nicely? Like it's for me, I have to be in so much pain in order to move that praying isn't going to get me out of that pain. I mean, obviously a power greater than myself gets me there. I'm not saying that I get there on my own. I'm not saying that I get there on my own, but I can't pray for the willingness to be willing. I just have to pray for the willingness and do it anyway. Even though it's uncomfortable, even though I don't want to, even though it hurts, even though it's time consuming, painful, whatever it is, I can't pray for the willingness to be willing to do something. I just have to, okay, yes, God, help me do this. Please help me do this. Not help me be willing, just help me do this. And then I need to take the action. And I need to always, and a lot of times I have to ask for help to take the action. Like I have to say to my friend Danielle or my friend Chris or whoever, like, hey, I need to bookend this. Okay. This is really uncomfortable. I don't want to do this. Please help me. I'm going to report at the end of the day that I did this because I'm an addict. I don't want to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to push all the limits not to do it. So, like I can't pray for the willingness. I have to take the action. And typically I also have to be accountable to somebody because I'm not accountable. I'm just not. People have to be in charge of me. I always say that there's like a boardroom. a boardroom of people that are in charge of me, because I can't be unattended. So hope that's helpful.
Thank you to you both.
Thank you both very much, and thank you for the question. Before we get to Nikki, we have a quick anonymous question from the chat. Can each speaker say what they did to grow their spiritual faith? Yeah, if you can give like a one or two statement answer on what you did to grow your spiritual faith.
For me, it was it, I was bought. I bought in on the idea of what my sponsor said. I did what he said, and then I had the experience. So for me, it begins with trust. The first thing in the process, I trust. I trusted what he said. I trusted he had a solution to my problem, and I did what he asked me to do. And then I started stacking experience after experience after experience of asking the question, getting the answer, getting the advice, getting the directions, following the directions, and then all and this has just led me. I don't know much about faith. What I do know is continuing seeking and caring. I don't know. I'm more confused today in what God is than I ever have been in my life. But I think I'm on the path, and I can tell by the pull of it. I can tell by that's not right. I need to make an amends for that. I overstepped. That was incorrect, right? And I could tell, and I couldn't before. And that I think that's God working in my life, and I don't even know what God is. So, but it is stacking those experiences of trusting what somebody else said, and then having those experience after experience after experience, and then having them frame for me, having my. So this is what we did, Tim. Yep, you didn't do it alone. We did it together. This and then all of a sudden you've got 60 days, 90 days. We did it together. We constantly, yep. You were here. You were at the meetings. Yep. We did it together. We were reading these. We were doing this stuff. You were sending your emails. Yep. He kept. It wasn't. He was framing it that it was never me. It was us. It's always we. It's never me, right? It's always us. He was helping because I couldn't see that on my own, because I would just take credit for it continuously, and he'd be like, no. He would frame it for me, and then that turned into a faith. That turned into it turned into service. It turned into to love of you guys, for lack of a better word.
Thank you, Tim. Ori or Amber, do you want to add to that?
I can just say something. I remember the first time I picked up the phone and I didn't eat. And I remember, I mean, this person isn't even in program anymore, and she has no idea that she saved my life. And it was like Tim said, it was a we, I wasn't alone in it. I wasn't alone in it. And I got to see that, oh, I didn't eat over it. I didn't eat over it. And then there was another situation and I didn't eat over it. And then, the shit hit the fan and I didn't eat over it. And to me, that strengthened my faith, and it was for a long time. I mean, it was the rooms, it was my sponsor, it was, it's never this person on a pedestal for me. It's a beautiful sunset. It's life, and it's I don't know how else to explain it other than that it was just one instance after another that I was so powerless in the moment. And yet it worked out, and that I can say, I am powerless over my life. I know I have absolutely no control over anything that goes on in my life or the outside world. The only thing that I have control over is that I can get on this meeting, I can share, I can report my food. I can take my pictures. I can eat my absent food. That's what I have control. I can make the outreach calls. I do not have control over anything else. And I think that letting go and letting God, that really hit home for me, but not probably for several years. And like I said, I even relapsed in recovery. I mean, in I obviously I mean I was in prelapse, but like I relapsed, you know. And I still and I knew that that lie inside me. I felt that lie inside me. I knew I was telling a lie, you know. And it wasn't until I went to the birthday party and I kept hearing somebody over and over and over share their story about one little pee on their plate, and I knew. Like, no, wait a minute here. And I asked for help, and that person helped me. The more I ask for help in this program, the more I see the faith, the more I see faith, the more I feel faith inside, in spirituality. That's the only way that I can see it is that I asked for help in it, and it was and I was able to receive it.
Yeah, I don't like my faith isn't beautiful, but I'll say that I don't know if I necessarily have the. I'm convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Like I am absolutely convinced that when I get in the mix, I'm gonna blow it up. Like I've already had my experience with running this plane into the ground, so. Like anything else has to be better than that at this point. Like, as long as I don't do, like, let me just get out the way enough to see if something else can happen. And like Tim talked about, like, now I've, like, these experiences are stacked up that show me, oh, I'm being taken care of. Like, and it's, I don't know how I don't know how I got through that, or I don't know how this happened, but I'm being taken care of. Relying upon these ideas here and not mine. And I think that's all I need right now. It's just like, you know what? These have ideas have served me for these last 10 years and amazing things have happened. Let me probably be, if I just continue in this way, like it's gonna get better. Like that's kind of how I look at it.
Thank you very much, all three of you, for that, and thank you for the anonymous question. Nikki, you're up.
Yeah, hi. Thank you to the speakers. I'm truly blessed by it today. Tim, you talked about 10, 11, and 12 being continued seek and carry, and that takes my way and puts it aside. And that it gives me access to God. So with that being said, I have that on my mind. What did that look like for all of you, not just Tim, the first year, and how did that evolve over time?
Yeah, that was it was very it was very ugly practice. It was like it was ugly. I couldn't do any of that, right? I couldn't, right? It was so difficult. I mean, it took me a long time to get to that point. But you know, I would here's what I did do well. When I was hungry, I let people know. That was all I was willing to do. All I was willing to do at the beginning, I'm hungry and it's not feeding time. I just ate lunch and I'm already hungry. It's 2 hours till breakfast or whatever it is, I'm hungry, right? I would let people know in real time what the hell was going on. And that was the original 10th step for me, letting people know in real time. And the only feeling I was willing to discuss was I am hungry. That's, it was not pretty. Right. Meditation, here's what my how I started my day was I sent an email to my sponsor. And I don't know why that became like an anchor point for me in the morning, sending that email to him. It was just that check-in. And I felt good about myself. That was just another little success thing of sending that email to him. Okay, I did that check. Good boy, Tim. Good boy. And those little tiny little wins is what it looked at. And of course I would tell you what to do. I mean, as your sponsor, I would love when people ask me to sponsor them. I'm like, I'll tell you what to do, you know? And so I did it poorly for the better half of a decade. You're going to have to get through the poor section like I did.
Nikki, I didn't have a consistent morning routine until 8 years in. Like, I envied people that, oh, I have a 45-minute morning routine. I didn't get that until like 8 years in. And there were periods where my meditation was a walking meditation, like, or, I, and helping, just For me, it was just like finding ways to be of service in some way, some capacity. Like before I started sponsoring people, I was doing putting away chairs, helping make coffee back when we had the physical meetings, just doing something to be a part of the community, listening to guys, talk about whatever, like just making myself available. It even today, it sometimes it has to be that simple. It can't be a formula. It's like, am I available to others? Am I of service? Am I talking to people frequently? Am I frequently exposing my thought life to others? Like, that's what it looked like in the first year. And I did it all imperfectly, but I was doing it.
Amber, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, I can add. I mean, like my head wakes up crazy. So, yes, I will say a couple prayers in the morning, and then I always get right on the meeting because that just settles me, and I like what Tim said about saying whatever in real time, and it's typically mostly to you guys. I mean, now, of course, I mean, I also tell my sponsor, but for me, it's more about, being honest and transparent in with my fellows. And I think because I'm not in person meetings, it's important for me to say it as soon as I can in real time on here. And service was really a big thing. I mean, it always has been very, very, very important in my recovery. And service to me can even be, well, I mean, it was told to me by my sponsor, was putting the shopping cart back at the grocery store, getting out of myself. However, I had to do that throughout the day. I had to constantly get out of myself and, doing the dishes for when I come home from work, for even though I didn't make them, being of service, staying out of, the self-pity. I can live there. And so, and I have been recently. I really have been living there. And so, it's do more service, get out of myself. I can't, because that can feed my ego too. So like I have to really be careful. And then when I'm not getting the praise that I want to get, so it's like it's just constantly staying in check with the people that are in my recovery circle too. But I have to right now I'm in step 12, and I'm reading it, and I'm really seeing how to work it in other areas and to continue. And so I don't know, but like I said, I don't really have a practice. I like what somebody said. I wish that I was that person who sat for 45 minutes and could get calm and serene and all of that, but that's just not who I am. I like what Tim said, sit for 5 minutes, make your butt sit in the chair for 5 minutes. I can barely do that. I was just laying out in the sun and I'm on my phone and I'm getting up and I'm sitting down and I'm getting up. I mean, like, I cannot sit still. I'm an addict and sitting still in my own skin is hard. So I like that practice of just 5 minutes. So.
Thank you very much for the question, and thank you for the answer, guys. We have two questions left. We might be able to get to both, hopefully, maybe. Becca, you're up.
I just didn't want to put my hand down after having it up, but I think Nikki pretty much asked my question, so I think I'm good.
Awesome. All right, down to one. Marlene, you're up.
Hi, I'm Marlena, compulsive overeater. I've been in program 15 years. At the very beginning, my higher power took away my desire for recreational sugar. I've not had desserts or anything for 15 years, but I keep relapsing, just eating more than what's on my food plan. And I just don't understand. If I cannot eat recreational sugar, why can I not stick to my food plan?
Okay, so the question is, if we can avoid our alcoholic foods, but not stick to what we commit, in the day. Is that about right, Marlene?
Yes.
Okay. Amber, Ore, or Tim, who would like to take that first?
Yeah, Tim, go ahead.
Quick question. Are there other, because you said that sugar was given up, but are you sure that all the alcoholic foods have been given up?
I don't know.
So that's, I think, because there's that craving. We've got this phenomenon of craving. And that's a feeling beyond my mental control, right? Once I put that in, I then want more, right? And you might not go off on a terrible binge, but more means I'm going to have a little bit at dinner. I'm going to have a little bit the next day and the next day. And you might be able to, it's kind of like, you might not go off the rails with it, but it's going to constantly be with you. And so there's foods that you might want to address with your sponsor. Because it's it, I look at it, it's his food plan, right? I just lost my 17-year salad, right? Just 2 weeks ago or a month ago. It really sucks, right? But because it was, I was outside my healthy body range, right? And it's his plan. He removed it. He said, "This is what we're losing." I'm like, I got to argue with him, but he ultimately made the decision. So it's his food plan, not mine, right? And also, are there things that are still in there that are triggering craving, right? And if it is just extra quantities, right? You're uncomfortable. I'm guessing is going to happen. You sit down, you make the plate, or get close to making the plate, and you're like, oh, I want more. That's not going to be enough. I might add a little bit more, right? I know that feeling. That's the call time. That's a because I'm on my own. I'm going to add more food. Right. As long as it's allowable, I'm going to add more food. That's what I do. I'm a compulsive overeater. More, better, and different is always part of it. So that's a phone call. That's a call. I want more is always a phone call. That's an emergency. That is 911 time. Because I might not ever come back. I mean, that's the thing is I might eat that food, and even though I say I'm going to go back tomorrow to tomorrow's meeting, I might not. I look at it as you're rolling the dice when you. I need to make that phone call saying I'm afraid this is not going to be enough, but I'm going to eat what I committed to eating. So that's when for me that's phone call time.
Thank you.
Yeah, and something else for me, it's not just about substances. It's also about the volume. I'm a overeater. Like it took me a long time to get to a place where it's like, oh, overeating. I need clear cut boundaries over the amounts that I eat. Another part of my concession was that, oh, I can't do unplanned eating. If I don't have a plan that's not designed, like I need a plan that's designed for me, one that's not of my making, that's the concession that I had to make as well, or that I was given. Right. So, like I can't undereat, I can't overeat, I can't have any management, any agency when it comes to food, like because I'll always use.
Yeah,
Thank
you
you.
know, I also have a weighed and measured food plan, just because left to my own devices, I will eat more. And that's my spiritual practice. That's part of my spiritual practice is following the weighed and measured food plan. I like what Tim said about, other foods. I don't have sugar in my food plan, but there's also a lot of other foods that I just, I've either relapsed on them in the past. And so when I came back in 2021, I just didn't even want to put them on there just because, or I didn't want to, I didn't want, I put them on an alcoholic list because I didn't want to take the chance. To me, for me today, it is more about being sober than it is about, do I, I don't get to ever have this food again or whatever. And because I get to have way more food than my disease likes to tell me. And so another thing that for me, I think somebody else had touched on it too, was that it wasn't enough. You know, that's a spiritual thing for me because that's what I relapsed on. You know, it wasn't enough. I didn't think it was going to be enough to hold me over to the next meal. That's spiritual. I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die. If I'm a little hungry, I'm not going to die. My head's going to tell me that, but I'm not going to die. I mean, we've all fasted for a blood test. We've all had some kind of procedure. We did not die, you know. But my head is going to tell me that I'm going to die to the next meal, and or that being and being hungry is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. And I know that if I'm hungry today, it's because I waited too long to eat. It's not because of my food. It has nothing to do with my food. Once I put the alcoholic foods down, once my you know, all the parameters were in place, you know, I'm never hungry. You know, I'm never hungry. And if I am, it's a feeling. It's not real hunger. It's a feeling. And that is and that was something that ruled me for a really long time. And like what Tim said, I call it out in real time. I'm hungry. Why? Who knows? I know it's not mealtime. I know that I'm not, I mean, I eat the same shit every single day. There's a reason. It's not because of my food.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question, and thank you to the speakers. All right, let me stop this. And I'm going to stop the recording.